Persepolis, the winner of a special jury prize at this year's Cannes Film Festival, and a film that's just been nominated for a Golden Globe as the best foreign language film, is the poignant story of Marjane Satrapi's unforgettable childhood and coming of age in Iran and Austria during the early years of the Islamic Revolution. It's an animated feature film for adults, co-written and co-directed by Ms. Satrapi, based on her best-selling graphic memoir, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome her back to the show today. Hello.
Hello. I'm very happy to be back here, too.
And congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Was it your decision to turn your graphic memoir into a film?
Yes and no. I mean, in the beginning, I really always thought that it was the worst idea in the world, you know, to turn a book into a movie, because it's not necessarily because you have made a good graphic novel that you're able to make a good movie.
But I'm sure there are people out there who said, "We'll just move these figures and have them say the same things, and everything will be fine."
Yes, exactly. And it really doesn't. It is really not this way, because you know the two languages, they're so different. We had to forget actually about the book, and you know, try to create a new language, a cinematographic language. So in reality, what happened is that a friend of mine, he wanted to become a producer, and he said, "Oh, let's make that into a movie." And I was like, "Yes, I want an animated movie. I want it in black and white. I want it hand drawn in Paris. I want to work with my best friend. I want Catherine Deneuve. I want this. I want that." And he was like, "Okay." And then I was like, "Shit, now I have to do it." Now I accept everything. So, you know.
You thought you made so many demands that they would turn you down and.
Yes, exactly. And at the same time, I said to myself, I mean, how many times would that happen in my life that somebody would come telling me I can have a studio, I don't have to make any compromise, I have the final cut, I can do whatever I want. So I took the chance.
Now, hand-drawn, you mentioned, this is not made the way animated films are made these days, with a lot of computer work.
Well, yes. You know, first of all, for what we wanted to say and what we wanted to keep from the comics, that means, you know, these shaky lines and, you know, this feeling that is a real drawing. I mean, it was impossible to make it by computer. But also, the co-director Vincent Parrono and myself, I mean, none of us know, we don't even know how to write an email. We don't know how to type. I mean, how do you want us to make a tri-dimensional movie? We don't understand at all the computer. We are not technical person at all. So the movie, we had to make a movie that we could understand what we were doing.
Well, usually what people do is they do a bunch of drawings and then they send them off to some Asian studio and and then they come back and they make a couple of changes.
Yes, but then you don't have the quality because, you know, it's just, you know, if you want quality or not. You know, before starting this movie, I thought, you know, a bunch of animators will make the movie. I will come 1-2 times per day. I will yell at them per week. I will yell at them, and they will make the work, and I will become rich and famous. But in reality, it's not like that.
You wind up doing a lot of drawings.
I had to be there before everyone. I had to leave after everyone. I had to be there all the weekends. So it was a lot of work.
Had your co-director, Vincent Parrono, made films?
He made actually 2 short features, you know.
You really have 2 beginners working on this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because he made this 5-minute movie and this 1.5-minute movie. We were really beginners. We didn't know at all what we were doing.
And you said you wanted Catherine Deneuve to voice the part of your mother.
Yes.
That was a real coup when you got her. That happened. Just call her and say.
Yes, we sent her the script and I knew from before that she liked me because she was saying that she, you know, I heard that she liked my books, etc. But, you know, I mean, we sent her the script. And what she said, she was like, "Oh, for me, this is a script of a real movie. I think it's an excellent script and I want to be part of that." So that is the way she got in.
Were you at all hesitant to go over this material again? You'd written the book. You'd done the book tour. You're moving on with your life.
Yes. This is true. This is you are completely right. And at the same time, I don't know why, but from the second that you know you write a script, from the second it's filmed, the character becomes fictional. Mm. It takes even more distance. I cannot tell you why. And at the same time, since the challenge of making the movie, the way of making it was very different, and we had to add lots of story, create story that they were not in the book, etc., I really approached it like really another work.
So it was easier to deal with some of the heartbreaking aspects of this because you were just so involved with the drawing and the logistics of the thing and rewriting, in effect, rewriting the story.
Exactly.
Why did you want it to be in black and white like the book?
Well, you know, that was like an obvious choice because, you know, Anne Vincent and I, we come from underground comics in which, for economical reason, we have always worked in black and white. This is to start with. But also it was an aesthetical choice. And also, you know, this black and white actually, and animation. You know, in the movie we have really many different narration. It goes from the puppet scene to the surrealistic scene, you know, of meeting with God, to the family scene, etc. So either your name is Federico Fellini and you can go from one narration to the other with lots of grace, but our name is not Federico Fellini. And the fact that it was animated and black and white, we could go really from one narration to the other one and at the end keep a coherence. So what was supposed to be a minus, you know, at the beginning, at the end, helped us a lot.
Well, it struck me as a rather old-fashioned film in the fact that you did everything hand-drawn in the way that probably Disney used to do it. And at the same time, it had all of the storytelling techniques of live-action films.
Absolutely, because, you know, the thing is that we made a movie, and it happens that this movie is in animation. Because, you know, I mean, for me, animation is not a genre. It's just a technique, you know. This is it. And we didn't have any reference in the animation. I mean, what is so-called the animation, if you consider it as a genre, normally, you know, is a linear story, is a fairy tale. You have a rabbit and a donkey and a teddy bear and these things, and, you know, all of these people, they are happy together. We just made a movie, and this movie is drawn. So we really took the animation as a medium and not as a genre.
So you tell the story largely in flashback. You have jump cuts. You have all sorts of things that
we
associate with the French New Wave.
With the French New Wave, you know, we watched many times. I watched myself many times, you know, The Goodfellas of Martin Scorsese, because, you know, the way the narrative tells the story, and like that, you know, he can say 25 years of story of some person. Actually, you know, this voice is not all the time there, but just to understand, you know, where you have to use the voice like that, you know, you can use it, you know, as a cement between different part of the story. Yes, a lots of things. But the thing is that, you know, Vincent and myself, both of us, we go to cinema very often, and we like to, I mean, I have always watched the movie. I always watched them twice. Once because I go and watch the movie and I'm in the story, and once another time I go to understand how they make it. So, you know, this is a good habit, actually.
So you've always been interested in how film is made, and perhaps you were preparing yourself eventually to make a film.
I don't know. At the time I was making that, it was really, for me, it is this magic. I was always the time wondering, how can it be that for 1.5 hour or 2 hour, I can be in a dark place and be completely in another world? And that was the magical part of it. I was like, how does he do it, you know, to make it become so magical? You know, I had, like, for example, I had to go to the cinema like 5 times to understand how he makes it in The Night of the Hunter. You know, when he filmed this kid, you know, in this room, you have the feeling it is filmed from very far.
You're talking about Charles Laughton as a major influence on
your
style?
Absolutely, absolutely. And though I was like, how can he be in a room and be like, I don't know, like 70 feet behind. I understood that he was actually in the room, but all around the image, you know, he puts this black cache so that you have the feeling that it's filmed from outside, but you are inside. But I had to go 5 times, you know, to understand it. And actually, The Night of the Hunter, you know, when in the movie you have Uncle Anoush that goes, you know, and you have all the animal in the first, you know, in the first plan, that is a real, you know, that is a real reference to The Night of the Hunter, when the kids, they are on this boat, and, you know, you have all the animals on the first plan.
My guest is Marjane Satrapi, who is the co-director and co-writer of Persepolis, based on her best-selling graphic novel. It opens tomorrow at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Angelica. So obviously you've thought a lot about making movies, but you also have thought a lot about politics and telling a political story through a personal story. Well, that was the goal from the start, wasn't it?
Yes. I mean, I just wanted to bring the thing, you know, to a very personal level. And that's why I would call more this movie, you know, a humanistic movie more than a political movie. Because when I hear, for me, I mean, from my point of view, when I hear a political movie, I have the feeling that it's this movie of Soviet Union, you know, for to say how Marxist was perfect and Lenin was great. It's something of a leaflet that, you know, you read and, you know, you throw it away. And for me, politics attempt to say that they have answer for very complicated question. In the work that we do, we don't have any answer to give. We only have a question to ask, just to show that the situation is complex, just to show that the human being is the human being. So, yeah, of course, this background is there. But I hope that in 20 years, when Iran is not going to be the center of attention, the movie will have some value still.
But still, yeah, we do learn a bit about how politics worked in Iran. In fact, we learn a lot about Iran, a country that perhaps you also felt wasn't understood completely. Absolutely. By people outside of the country.
Yes, especially today, you know. Today, a very bad thing happens is that, you know, I mean, they reduce, you know, people, you know, to some abstract notion, calling them, I don't know, ISIS of evil, fanatic, etc., etc. I mean, out of the condescency that this thing has, I don't care about the condescency, it's something very dangerous because, you know, from the moment that we name the evil and we give the evil an address, this is the beginning of fascism. Then let's go and kill all these people and then we can live very well between each other. And I just try to give a personal point of view, and the goal is that, you know, if people, they watch it and they can just even 5 minutes identify to this person and they could be them, then it's fine.
Well, we also do learn things, and I don't think I've read anywhere else. For example, when plastic keys are given to young Iranian soldiers.
Yes.
That was in the war against Iraq?
Yes, that was in the war against Iraq, and you know, do you know that was a plastic key? Actually, they gave them plastic key, saying that if they die, you know, with this plastic key, they would go to paradise. It's very
simple. They need a plastic key? What did people do before plastics were developed?
I don't know. Well, you know, George Bush found another thing. He promised to people, you know, American passport if they go and die in Iraq, you know, that their whole family would have American nationality or, you know, American green card. In America, you have your own plastic key also. It is called an American green card.
Well, you, this is also about a young woman who's coming of age, not only in Iran, where she has to adjust to the revolution and everything that it does to her family and to her own life, but then what happens when a young person winds up living in another culture, in this case, in Vienna.
Yes.
I don't know who the real villains of the piece are. Maybe it's Austrians.
Yes, I don't know. But, you know, this is also, you know, I had a big discussion with Austrians because they were like, do you hate us so much? And I was like,
they've seen the film.
Yes. And I was, come on, I don't hate you. I mean, I was this adolescent full of hormones. You know, not only I was away from my parents, but my parents, you know, they were being bombed every day. I was in this very bourgeois, uptight kind of school. I was a marginal, all of that.
And you were a foreigner and you were treated like a
foreigner. And
I was
a foreigner and I was not treated well, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it would be Austria or anywhere else, it would have been the same.
Well, have people read the book back in Iran? Do you get any feedback from people who've seen it?
Well, you know, the feedback comes, you know, from my friends that they tell me, oh, everybody in Iran, they love you. But, you know, these are my friends. I don't trust what they say.
And have you been able to go back?
You know, I can go back. The question is that if I can come back again here, and I don't think I can, so mm-hmm. I don't go back for this reason.
Well, you've lived in Paris for a fairly long time now. Would you ever go back to Vienna?
Yes, I have gone back to Vienna. And actually, it was much less nasty than in my memories. I had a good time in Vienna, actually.
Do you think that there'll ever be a situation where there can be some kind of a reconciliation between Iran and the West, considering the fact that there are so many things that the sense I get, there are so many things that are similar, and yet there are so many other things that seem to be so different.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, I mean, if you just listen to the sociologist, Iran is the most pro-Western country. I mean, I'm talking about the population. You know, people, they are far from, you know, having a knife between their teeth and wanting to kill the Westerner. But, you know, for me, to the whole world to become a better place to live. You know, the changes, they cannot only be in Iran. I mean, we have considered for a too long time that the world was not one. And now when I say the world should be one, etc., I sound like a hippie, you know, like a peace and love person. And I'm not a peace and love person. The thing is that I'm, for this last few months, I've been talking so much about peace and love. And my problem is that if a narcissistic, egocentric person like myself start talking this way, that means the situation is really bad in the world. But for the world to go better, we have to consider it really as one entity. Otherwise, we will always have problem.
Well, things have eased up a bit now that the Bush administration has suggested that Iran is not pursuing a nuclear weapons policy. And so that may change. And then recently, the former president of Iran, Khatami, criticized the current regime, which suggests that there's still some dissent.
Yes, but, you know, it's Iran. Lots of things actually going on in Iran. You know, you had a lots of, you know, student movement, et cetera, et cetera. But, of course, you know, I mean, these are the things that you they never show on the TV, because if you say you show just the bearded guy, then it's easy. If you show all the other movement, then suddenly it becomes much more complicated, and we don't like complexity.
Now, Marjan, where do you go from here? Are you going to be making more films, or are you going to go back to graphic novels?
You know, I like to do both of them because, you know, for me, my solitarian work, I really miss it because I like to be with myself all alone and all of that. But at the same time, making a movie, you know, and working with all these people is such a big challenge also. You know, it's something extremely dynamic about it that I like also. So if I could do both of them, I would be the happiest woman in the world.
Although this film definitely is true to your drawing style, the drawings in the film will remind people very much of the drawings in the graphic novel. And congratulations. The film has been so well received, and with good reason. It opens tomorrow at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and at the Angelica. In fact, it's a great Christmas present for New York City. I've been talking with Marjan Satrapi, whose Persepolis has been made into a fabulous film. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leonard.